We're talking about cars for the next hour or so, and you're welcome to join us anytime you want, 602-508-0960. And because Nikki called in early, I'm going to take her right out of the chute, even before we do any kind of business, because it takes a few minutes to get in, and Nikki's first. So, Nikki, good morning to you, and how can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. It's Vicki with the 69C10.
Okay.
It's got 186,000 documented original miles on it, original engine, except for I had a two-barrel carburetor and headers put on it by Classic Corner Garage. But the reason I'm calling is recently I'll be driving, you know, and then I'll pull over and stop at, like, the hardware store or something, and the engine won't start again for about 5 minutes. It acts like the battery's totally dead, and then I'll wait 5 or 10 minutes, and then it's fine. But it's embarrassing.
Okay, it's a four-cylinder, you said?
No, it's a six. It's the 250.
Okay.
The 1969 250.
Okay. It sounds like a starter problem. I would carry a gallon of water, and if you hit the key and nothing happens, there's no click, there's no crank, there's no noise, no nothing, then I would douse the starter with cold water, because you said header, and this was a common problem when we put headers on cars, and the starter's right next to the header. And so if
I had the headers wrapped with insulation to keep the heat out of the engine compartment.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, you can try the water trick and throw water on it and let it sit for just a few minutes and then see if it'll crank over. And if you find that that's it, then we've got a heat problem. And obviously wrapping the headers didn't work. The real question is what kind of amp... And you also said there's no noise, which means the solenoid is not engaging. So there's no reason for me to check the battery for its reserve power to make sure that it's above 9.6 when you ask it to crank the starter. There's no need for that because we're not even getting to that point, because all you've got is the key on, you're going to start, there's no noise, and there's no cranking. So one of the things that you can do is if you go to MarkSalem.com, I want you to look at the FAQ called No Crank, No Noise, No Start. It'll say something like that. And it teaches you how to look at the headlights to kind of diagnose what the problem might be. If the headlights are not on at all and you hit the key and nothing happens, we have a bad connection in and around the battery. It could be the ground on the frame, it could be the ground on the motor, it could be the positive on the battery, the negative on the battery. But anyway, it'll walk you through by looking at the headlights. So the headlights white and bright, are the headlights go away when you hit the key? Do the headlights turn yellow when you hit the key? All of that kind of stuff is, we're using the headlights like a voltmeter. And so we're going to watch the headlights and it'll kind of tell us what's going on. But on a 1 to 10 scale, this isn't, I don't know what the fix is going to be, but to diagnose this, it's an easy 2 or 3.
Oh, thank you so much. I've been worried about it because I wait 5 or 10 minutes and it starts up fine.
Yeah, but is it a hot soak? Otherwise, every time you try to start it, you park it, you run into the liquor store to get your husband's booze, you run it back outside, and it won't start. That's called a hot soak. But if you run into the grocery store and you're in there 20 or 30 minutes and you come out and it still doesn't start, that's something different. Now, let's talk about start and crank. Again, we're going to stick on the word crank. It doesn't crank over, right?
Right.
Okay, because it might crank over, go rrr, 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 but it doesn't catch that spark or fuel. But that's why we have to talk about, is it cranking? Is the starter cranking over? And then if it doesn't start, it's different than if it doesn't crank. And in your case, I think you said it doesn't crank over.
Right.
Okay. Those are pretty easy.
Thank you so much. I'm going to print that out and carry it with me in the truck.
I think it's FAQ 29, I think. But anyway, you'll find it. It'll say,
I'll
like,
be able to find it.
Yeah, no crank, something. It'll say something about no crank, no noise, something like that. Okay?
Thank you so much. You're a rock star, Mark.
Not always. You can ask my wife. But thank you. Thank you very much. My wife always listens, and she'll call me in just a few minutes and say, obviously, Vicki has been drinking early in the morning because she doesn't know you very well. Anyway, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is a friend of mine, and I've known him since 1983. The shops that I tell you are good shops, they're not. I'm not telling you that because they're paying me, although they do pay me. The fact of the matter is they're friends of mine, and I know they're good. I know they're honest. I know they have integrity. I know they're not going to rip you off. I know they're not going to lie, and they're not going to tell you that you're due for this service knowing full well that the service is a 100,000-mile service, and they're trying to sell it to you at 30,000 miles. And that's happening a lot right now. So Action Auto Repair, he's on I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, good guy. And he's been around a very, very long time. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to give us a call, you can. And we'll talk about your cars and stuff. But I'm going to open a door that I know I'm going to be sorry for. And I think what we can do is we can talk about electric cars. And that seems to be on just about everybody's mind. And that means that we're going to be... We talk about the future and the absence of gasoline and diesel cars. And let me tell you what I think. I think you can imagine how many different people live and work at places that have to do with cars, trucks, UPS trucks, motorcycles, boats, one-ton dualies, horse trailers, whatever. There's just a lot. So if someone is suggesting in my lifetime we're going to collapse the gas and oil and diesel stuff and we're going to go to all electric, it's not something I'm going to bite off on. We've already done this before. This is what happened when we went to propane, and this is what we had. And then there was another propane and something else. Gil, do you remember? It was some other way to power a car. And I think it was some kind of a fuel, not propane, but it was something else. You'll remind me. 602-508-0960. You'll remind me.
I can remember, yes.
And we did propane, and it was going to replace the gasoline engine, and it was a miserable failure. And no matter what we have, and no matter how we put it in the tank, and no matter how we're going to move the car down the road, the biggest problem with the electric cars is their range. But I had someone who owned an electric car said something to me the other day, and I thought it was just genius. He says, when you drive an electric car, it's like driving around and having an eighth of a tank. You're constantly looking at the gauges. You're constantly adapting your throttle, your speed, you're coasting a lot, you're doing all kinds of things to make it. He said, so I'm going to give you less than a quarter tank of gas, and I'm going to have you drive Mark from your Tempe store to Payson. And I said, I think I could make it. And he goes, but on the way there, you're going to be easing up on the throttle. You're not going to be going fast. You're not going to pass anybody you don't want to pass. And you're going to be looking at the gas gauge and the fuel gauge. 80% of the time, your eyes are going to be on your dashboard instead of the road in front of you. It's just scary. And he says, okay. I said, yeah, but people leave Phoenix with a full tank of electricity. He says, yeah. But when they get there, they have a tough decision to make. Can I get home without stopping and charging? So we looked into having some charging stations put on our property because we have this small parking lot that's available, and we have a huge transformer right there, so we were thinking about it. But then the question becomes, what do the people do when their cars are being charged? So I talked with two or three places who had charging ports, and they said most people just sit in their car and play on their phones. And that's okay. They don't need to be taken to a restaurant, and they don't need to be catered to. But then the guys that do have charging stations said, oh, but they want that. And that's okay. It's okay. I would hope that if my wife and I had an electric car and we had the option to hop on a bus and go half a mile away and have a meal, it'd be okay. But we have this infrastructure, and we have jillions and jillions of people that are building parts, fixing cars, all this kind of stuff, and this is just all going to go away, and we're all going to have a car with a fuel tank that's much smaller than we're used to, and it's all going to go away because everywhere we go, we're going to constantly be on the app on our phone looking for a charging station, because we're going to replace all the gas stations with charging stations. And I don't know about you, but that whole idea seems to be... And you know what? I like electric cars, and I have lots of friends that have electric cars. I've ridden them. I've driven them. I think they're rather impressive. But they're not even 1% of the cars on the road. But you can sure tell somebody from Payson coming home or from Phoenix going to Payson, you can see the Tesla who's watching his gas gauge because he's doing like 56 miles an hour. And I guess the 50 to 60 zone is some kind of a sweet spot. When they're going up hills, they go pretty good. But when they're going down hills, they're charging that battery. So they're going fast and then backing off and going fast and backing off. And this is what I'm told. So, like I said, I've ridden in them. I have friends that have them. They love them, and I love my friends. I just don't think that it's going to be anytime soon. And in addition to that, from the 60s and the 70s, we had cars with tailpipe emissions that if you locked yourself in your garage, you were going to be dead in 15 minutes. Dead in 15 minutes. That's the way it was in the 50s and the 60s and to some extent into the 70s. Today, and I'm saying this with a grin, today, if you locked yourself in the car with your 2020 Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, Toyota, the top five big dogs, you're going to die of starvation before you die of asphyxiation. That's all there is to it. The tailpipes on those are really, really clean. And so that's really how what it's all about is it has to do with vehicle emissions and pollution and stuff like that. There's a lot of you out there that are smiling because I'm saying I remember in the 60s and the 70s, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, those kinds of cars were polluting son of a guns. I mean, they just drank gasoline, but they sure went fast. And today we have these little sippers, and they sniff the gasoline out of the tank, and you get 20, 30, 40 miles. We never got 20, 30, 40 miles an hour unless you were coming off South Mountain and you were in neutral, and you coasted all the way down. So there's just no way. But I don't know how what we're going to do with everything, because this is a conversation that me and the kids have had. Dad, what happens if it's all electric cars? We're a car repair shop. What's going to happen? Well, they still need tires. They're still going to need work. They're going to need window motors. They're still going to wreck them, so the body shops are going to be around, on and on and on. So anyway, 602-508-0960 if you want to chime in or if you have a car question, I'm all game. 602-508-0960. Buttons the way I'm supposed to, and then everything is fine. If I can take a minute of your time and tell you about automatic transmission exchange, Phil's been in the Phoenix area since the 60s. He knows transmissions, and when you understand transmissions from the 50s and 60s, then you understand that we're going to use throttle pressure, speed, RPM, fluid pressure, all kinds of stuff to shift the transmission, and all we've done is change the way that we do that. And that's all there is to it. So today we have all kinds of solenoids and electronic controls and stuff that look at a bunch of inputs and then decide when to shift from first to second. Phil's a good guy. He's on 40th Street in Washington. He knows automatic transmissions. If you need somebody to drive your car with you, you can call and make an appointment to do that. They'll put somebody in the car with you as long as you can demonstrate the problem. The big problem there is, according to Phil, and I believe this because it happens at my shop as well, is the customer will come and it won't happen. They can't make it happen. We're not mad at you when that happens. It's just that we know it's intermittent. So kind of learn how to make it happen and then give us a call. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And Gil, who's up next?
We have Dragon.
Okay. Good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I've listened to you a number of times. I happen to be in the car. Just turn it on, and you were talking about the electric cars and the gas consumption and that kind of stuff. So brought back the memory of my personal experience. So I thought I'd pass it on to you.
Sure.
In 1978, I lived in Chicago area in Northbrook in Chicago suburbs. I bought a brand new Jeep Cherokee. So I took it in for first service, and I was just waiting for him to wash it and so forth. I was talking to a service manager, and it took a little longer, so we had a long talk. And he told me about his brother-in-law worked for GM testing grounds in Detroit area. And he said, 1978, they had carburetors. carburetors, they were getting over 50 miles to the gallon. And they had them shelved, they wouldn't use them. This is, what, almost 50 years ago.
Yeah.
What happened?
I heard that too, and I had people swear that to me, but I've never seen, I mean, the carburetor was the most inefficient one.
Right.
And today we're in fuel injection, and then we have port fuel injection, and then we have sequential port fuel injection. And the computer knows exactly when to spray how much based on 20 different inputs.
Sure.
So I'm with you. There was always those stories about carburetors that would give us 50 miles to the gallon, but I think you'll agree with me that back in the 70s, we didn't much care what the fuel economy was. We just wanted to know how long we could burn the back tires.
Exactly.
So,
however, you know, it's not, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire, usually. So if these guys, you know, shelved the a product that didn't help them, oil industry, you know, it's kind of like the Lancel engine and, you know, and all kinds of stuff like that. But that's a real issue. There is nobody can tell me that the cars can't get better mileage, much, much, much better mileage than we get today.
Well,
even though it's much better than it was in the 70s.
We're three times the 70s.
We could be three times what we are now if they put the effort to it.
Well, and
they don't want to.
And I here's it's a mixture of air, fuel, compression, and timing. Those four variables. And cold air carries more fuel than hot air. And so now you have air, but we got to split it into hot and cold. Then we have fuel, and if we're going to spray it in, then it atomizes and it turns to a vapor much quicker as opposed to drip it in that the carburetors do.
I fully understand all of that.
I'm doing it for everybody else that's listening to you and I talk.
Here's another thing that gets me. We Manhattan Project was developed in about a year. I'm sure you know what Manhattan Project is.
Go ahead.
And in all these years, we couldn't find a better way to power our cars than put the gas in the tank. I don't buy that either.
I don't know. What else would you put in the... How, if you were the king of the world, what car would you build? How would you get us around?
I'm not a car expert. I'm just saying that there's atomic energy. There's all kinds of other energies, but the oil industry has the grip on this gas that we've got to use in order to make them rich.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, fair enough. And I agree with you that oil is the source of gasoline, and I agree with you that they have the market covered, and I agree with you that the government is doing their best to control them. But I also want to remind you that my one-ton Dodge diesel truck gets 16 miles to the gallon, where my dad's truck got 6.
But we didn't care. I was paying 19 cents for gas at that time.
I know, but you can't keep changing the target on me, though. The target is what are we going to do with cars, and is electric part of the future of us? And I suspect the answer is no, because we don't have the infrastructure for electric cars. And second of all, I don't think people are going to want to play video games every time they get in their electric car to see if they have 18 miles of fuel left, so to speak, according to the gauge, and they know that the place they're going is 17 miles away. I don't think that's going to work. So, anyway, but you bring up some good points, and I appreciate your calling. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. The electric car, the gas car, the diesel car, locomotives, oil companies, it's all kind of intertwined. There are a lot of people that earn their living with some derivative of automotive stuff and the gasoline engine today, the diesel engine today. There's lots of people. No matter which way this big ship turns, left, center, right, or does 180, it's going to affect a lot of people, both positively and negatively. But we've seen cars come and go that were the answer to our problems since the 50s, and I suspect that we'll if I was the guy that came out with an electric car and I just bought something for, what was it, $54 billion or $540, I don't remember, it was a huge number, and I had to borrow some from my buddies in order to buy Twitter, I would think he doesn't really care if his car ever ends up in the future with that kind of money. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. But I don't think you should throw your gasoline car away. I don't think you should be afraid of electric cars or being legislated that we have to buy electric cars. I don't think that the infrastructure is there. I don't think the car is ready for mass transit, and I really think that and there's nothing wrong with the cars we have today because the tailpipes are really clean in the cars we have today. But you can't go to São Paulo, Brazil, and look at the cloud of smog and say, yeah, that's, you know, tailpipe smog. Yes, it is. It's cars that were built 20 years ago. There's no new Cadillacs and Lexuses in São Paulo, Brazil, when they're showing the huge cloud of smog over the city. It's not likely that it's got a whole bunch of the newer model cars. And like I told you before, if you want to die because you're going to put your car in your garage and you're going to start it and the car has been made in the last, 20 years, you better pack a lunch because you're going to be in there a long time. It's going to take a long time, and I tell you that for a whole bunch of reasons, because I work on cars, and I've sniffed my fair share of tailpipes from the old ones and the new ones. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, when it comes to talking about cars and shops that do good car repair work, I need to tell you, or I want to tell you, about one in Sun City. There's lots of shops in Sun City. There's lots of good shops in Sun City. But the one for me that stands out the most is Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Chuck, the owner, and I have been friends since the late 60s and the early 70s. We kind of grew up together. I know that he knows right from wrong. I know that he knows how to treat people, how to be nice to people, and he also knows how to say to a customer, we may not be good for one another. That's just the way it is in the car repair industry. But if you're in Sun City and you say, hey, Mark, who's the best guy in town? My advice to you and my answer to you is Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And the phone, we have four lines open. If you want to contact, give us a call. Gil's going to say, would you like to talk to Mark? You say yes. He's going to ask your phone or your name, not your phone number. He's going to ask your name, and then he's going to whisper in my ear, Rod is next. And that's just what he said. So, Rod, good morning. How can I help you?
Well, good morning. Yeah, more on topic on the electric cars. My concern is no one's been able to explain to me the environmental impact we're doing, digging up there or mining the material to make the batteries, and then end of life of those batteries, what is going to happen to those? I did read an article, Volkswagen has a plant in Germany that can recycle 3,200 batteries a year. Well, each car has, I don't know, 10 to 15 batteries. You need to do the math how many batteries they can recycle. So I'm not sure those answers have been fully, or those questions have fully been asked for me and for my concern about trying to buy a rent or get an electric car.
Now, have you seen the picture of the kids in diapers mining the lithium for the batteries? Have you seen those?
Yeah, I have not seen that picture. No.
Those are funnier than heck. It's yeah. This is the kind of propaganda I'm going to stick up for. It's you have those kinds of pictures that are all over the internet, and these kids are obviously from a very poor country, and they're obviously haven't been fed, and they're kind of in diapers, and they have little picks, and they're picking against this big mountain or something. It's just that kind of stuff brings a smile to my face, but I'm kind of disappointed in whoever has that, what it is. But you're right. We've always had problems with batteries. We've always had problems with what we're going to do with the 12-volt battery that comes out of your car. We used to make money on those, and we don't anymore. And you know and I know that there's a whole lot of them in alleys all over the state of Arizona. There's a lot of them in the garage floor of some of the friends I have that they just haven't had time to take them back to the auto parts store. And I don't know anybody that's really recycling or anybody that says, I've watched the battery go from a shop's floor all the way through the recycling process, but I do know that there are parts of the battery that are valuable. So I know that the plastic case is no big deal, but there's lead inside that is valuable, and evidently those are recycled for that, and whether they come back as a battery is a whole different discussion. So I'm with you. It's a little scary on the big batteries.
Yeah, it's like, you know, what are we gonna, if that's the road we're going down, well, let's someone come up with a study of what's going to happen to the, at the end of life with all these batteries, because you know it's going to happen. Especially here in Arizona, these batteries start to live forever, and we just got to have a big dump yard where we're going to dump them all. And is that any better than what we currently have?
And you know, I'm told the reason why that is because we can work 365 days a year and we don't have snow.
2 minutes.
Yeah, that is true.
And I don't know the answer. I think that's one of the many questions, but I prefer to believe that people are going to vote with their wallets. And if an electric car is something they want, then I believe that we have, not me, not you, but if there's someone selling an electric car, then someone can buy it, and then they can deal with it, and it's a free country. I just don't like the idea that we're going to put everybody out of business except people who have computers and have your car connected to Wi-Fi, and he's going to fix your flat tire, he's going to fix a bad electrical connection, he's going to fix the fact that you hit a curb and the top of the right front tire now faces 2 o'clock and the bottom faces 7 o'clock. All of that other stuff. So that's kind of, it's just unrealistic, and I've walked this path before.
I'm sure. Yeah, I have a Dodge Ram pickup that gets 15 miles a gallon, no matter if it's a full empty behind wind, tailwind. But the good news is it's paid for. So I don't have a huge truck or even, and, you know, it does cost me a penny to put the gas in it, but it is paid for.
And you're right, and in your Dodge truck, when you throttle up pretty hard, there's probably not much coming out of the tailpipe. That's called opacity. And it's not much out there, unless, of course, you have a tuner or somebody has played with the fuel delivery system. And then on a wide-open throttle on your Dodge truck, you're going to puff a little bit of black smoke. But that's just to show the little guy next door to you in his Honda four-cylinder that he's not going to beat you to the where the two lanes merge in.
Exactly. That's some pickup, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Rod. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be here until noon, so if you'd like to call in and talk about electric cars, or you have a problem with your car, or this. I took my car in, and they gave me a list of stuff that I needed to have done. And if you have one of those lists in front of it, I would love to talk to you. And all I need from you is what kind of year, make, and model car do you have? I don't need to name, no, I don't want to know the name of the shop. And I want to know how many miles you have on your car. That's what I want to know. So those are the kinds of discussions that seemed beneficial. And we'll be back right after this. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We have two guys waiting to talk, and actually three. So we have two open lines. If you want to grab one of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Two lines available. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th Street and Greenway. He covers that northeast quadrant of the city for me. He's a great shop. He's a good guy. His wife Polly is a little nicer than he is, but Tom knows cars from vintage cars to new cars. He does a good job in fixing cars and a real good job in communicating. So they ask a lot of questions so they fix the right problem. So if you're in that northeast area of Scottsdale and Fountain Hills and that area up there, then Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway is my suggestion. If you don't already have a shop, and if you do, you should stay there. Kevin, how can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Yep, I'm good.
Say I'm building a solar system, and I want to use lead-acid batteries. What is the typical shelf life of a good quality lead-acid deep-cycle battery?
Okay.
Like I keep it charged every month.
Okay.
And I want to use it for a long period of time.
Okay. Now, there's two kinds of batteries, and let's call them really what they are. We got golf cart batteries. And then we have the batteries that are in my diesel truck. And the batteries in my diesel truck are are designed for 300 amp draw when I'm cranking over the motor. Your solar system is not going to have anything like that at all. The golf cart batteries are designed for a small amount of electricity for a long period of time. I think that's what you're going to want. I don't think that a Daisy Delco battery, I don't think a 12-volt automotive battery, I don't think that's the, I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong and you want to call back and tell me I'm wrong, I'm a big boy, I can handle that. But the golf cart batteries, the 6-volt batteries, first of all, you put two 6-volts together, and it's a monster compared to any other 12-volt battery. So the golf cart battery have huge plates, and they're designed for a small amount of electricity for a long period of time, just like golfing. So I think...
Well, I'm going to use an inverter, a DC to AC inverter, so I can power my home on it.
Okay. And doesn't your solar system describe batteries? The system that you're installing, don't they have some kind of a specification for batteries? It's going to be, I don't think it's going to be a CCA, which is cold cranking amps, and that's an automotive battery, and that doesn't really apply to solar. But a deep cycle battery is like a boat battery that's going to be on a boat with a trolling motor.
Right.
And so if those are what you're after, that deep cycle battery that has a small amount of electricity over a long period of time, really and truly, the weight of the battery, in my opinion, tells you everything you want to know. If you got one battery for $100 that weighs 35 pounds, and then you've got another battery that weighs 50 or 60 pounds for twice that much money, you have a tough decision to make. But batteries are as good as the lead inside.
Yeah, they use those deep cycle batteries in RVs. And
yes.
They power the whole system off of those deep cycle batteries. They don't put lithium ion batteries in there.
No,
and
they
don't. People add solar systems to their RVs and trailers and things like that, and they still use their deep cycle battery.
But it's important to know that we have house batteries and we have engine batteries in a coach, in a motorhome. So to turn over that big diesel Freightliner, we're not going to use your deep cycle batteries. So we have two battery packs. The house part of the motorhome is a current draw that's pretty, not substantial, but pretty even across the board through the day. So when we run the air conditionings in our RVs, we're not using the deep cycle batteries to do that. We're using the generator. So it just, in, I think your solar system, and this is for your house, I'm assuming?
I'm building it for auxiliary use.
Okay. I think deep cycle is the appropriate battery, because I don't think the lithiums are going to do any good. I put a lithium in battery in my 6-cylinder 55 Chevy the other day, and it's a 5,000 watt battery. I think it's watt is the right word I'm using. The 6-volt lead acid battery, crank the engine over like this. This thing sounds like a machine gun with this 6-volt lithium, and starts the truck immediately.
Okay.
So that's the difference in the application. I wouldn't use a lithium battery to for a standard amount of electricity. So that's as close as I can get, but I want to admit to you that I'm not the expert in solar issues. I'm not.
Well, thing is that, you know, there's plenty of lead acid batteries around, and China controls the world supply of lithium. And if we have trouble with our supply chain, we're not going to be able to replace those lithium batteries very easily. And that's the deal with electric battery or electric cars. We don't have the infrastructure set up to provide all the necessary parts to keep producing those lithium ion batteries for the electric car.
Okay. Well, let me give you my China story real quick, okay? There's a guy in China.
Okay.
I have friends that take plans to China from American companies, and they build the automotive part, and it's shipped here to the United States and distributed nationally. But here's the dollars and cents of it. China has an economy. There's a guy there that has an engine mount business. He makes an upper mount for a Nissan, along with 100 other mounts. But this upper mount in the Nissan, it cost him $8.25 for two pieces of metal. He's punched holes in them where the bolts are going to go. Then he's got a piece of rubber in the middle, and he vulcanizes all of it together, $8.25. He sells it to a friend of mine who reps it for hundreds of companies in the United States for $8.50. Your car, okay. It's going to, when I install it on your car, it's $75. Now, who made all that money? The United States did, except for the ship that took it from China to the West Coast, and typically those are American ships, but that's the only place it's kind of variable. But who made the most money on that? I did. I made $45 on that mount.
Yeah.
I did. And so, and all of that money from $8.50 to $75 went into the United States. They depend on us for car parts. We keep their economy alive with car parts. And I don't care what Chevy, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Chrysler says, there's a lot of parts I know for sure come in a box that says Chrysler, Chevy, Ford, Honda, Toyota that were made in China. And so...
Okay, here's my basic question. What's the typical shelf life of a good deep cycle lead acid battery?
It depends on use. You can sit it on the shelf, and it'll stay there for 2 or 3 years. The voltage will degrade, and it may not have the threshold voltage that you need to for it to perform. But when you talk about shelf life, you're talking about putting a battery on a shelf and not using it?
No. Use it occasionally.
Okay.
Like I do on my electronic telescope. I've had the same battery. It's just a regular car battery. I've used for 8.5 years on my telescope.
What kind of a charger do you have connected to it?
It's a 12-volt trickle charger.
Okay, and it's on all the time?
No.
Okay.
I charge it once a month.
Okay.
Or once every other month and keep it up.
Okay.
And I keep the water levels up.
Okay, then that's your shelf life. The matter of how long the battery is going to... There's not a cut-and-dried answer. It's how much do you use it, how many times do you charge it, and how deep do you take it into the bowels? Do you go from 12-volt to 6-volt, or do you go from 12-volt to 10-volt? And then...
Well, I know that the extreme temperatures and conditions that are under the hood here in Arizona will degrade a battery if you don't keep it up.
That's not true.
You know, it'll be
that's
gone
not,
in four
that's
years.
Not true. That's not... Oh, yeah! Yeah, I agree that
it's
4 years.
It's been running about 4 years.
I agree it's 4 years. I don't agree with anything else you said. The temperature underneath the hood? Come on, we've had the same temperature underneath the hood since I was a kid. This is just, those are old wives' tales. The answer to your question, you answered it yourself. You said that you use that telescope battery for 4 years or something like that. So if you use it that much and you charge it back that much, it should give you 4 years of service. It matters on how big the draw is and how often you charge it, how many times you cycle it. I can tell you this. The experts tell me that a battery has so many cycles. So the bounce. So you go from, actually a fully charged battery is 13 volts. So you go from 13 and you go down to 8, then you go back to 12.6, and then you go back to 8.2. It's called the bounce. They say that creates the lifespan. So the deeper you take it, the shorter the lifespan. If you just scrape the crust off the top of the battery and you bounce it from 13 to 12.2 or maybe 11.8, and then you take it back to the 13, that bounce is small, so the battery's going to last longer. But if you take that battery and you run it in a motorhome and you run all the lights and the water pump and everything and the refrigerator in it, and you take it down to 6 volts where the system shuts down because it needs more than 6 volts, that's going to probably last 2 years, and that's the answer. Let's go to Al real quick. Al, good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, good morning. Best show ever. Thank you.
Thank you.
My question for you is, I got a 2006 Buick LaCrosse, and every once in a while, it'll kick the AC out, and I lose the temperature gauge, goes to down like there's no juice there, and it shuts the AC off. I did change the temperature sensor already. It was working fine, and it's doing it again.
Okay. This is kind of confusing to me, so let me ask you some questions. You're driving down the road, and you turn on your air conditioning, and it's blowing cold air out of the vents.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Ice
now,
cold.
When you say that the temperature, is it that you're not talking about the engine temperature, you're talking about the control on your dash where you said, I want 68 degrees air. That temperature goes away.
No, I apologize. I didn't deliver it correctly to you. on the temperature gauge on the dash goes to, I lose all that, and then in the middle it says no AC. It's got a it says like it shut the AC off, and the temperature, I got an actual, not an idiot light, I got a temperature gauge that goes down till there's like the L to the cold side where there's no juice at all.
Okay. I've never fixed that.
It throws the fan on too.
Okay. It sounds like to me that something is telling the computer that the engine is in an overheat condition. But it doesn't match
right.
with you saying that the gauge falls to the cold side. That doesn't match. The fan will be turned on in many cars if the computer senses that the fan is going to help cool the cooling system down. I don't know.
I lose the temperature indicator. You know, it say it's in the middle where it should be running normal between cold and hot.
Okay.
Once this shuts the AC off, I lose the temperature gauge too.
Okay.
I have nothing. Drops all the way to the left.
I don't know. I've never fixed this before, but I could tell you what I would do. The very first thing I do is I take the battery cables off of it and touch the cables together. Touch the cables together, not the battery terminals, the cables. So we're going to discharge all the capacitors. Then I would get underneath the dash and probably disconnect and reconnect the huge bulkhead connector that connects everything to the dash. I'd make sure that I had good battery cable connections, but I would need to talk to you more, and I need to see the car, because you keep saying that you lose the coolant, or you lose the temperature gauge. The problem is, if you lose the temperature gauge, you just lost the temperature gauge. The computer is talking to you and saying, here's the temperature gauge. But the computer already knows how hot or how cold the motor is. The fact that you lose the gauge doesn't change the fact that the motor's 210 degrees. And the computer knows that.
Right, exactly.
So I don't know.
That's probably why the fan kicks on too, because it doesn't know if it's hot or cold, right?
No. If it's turning on the fan, it and you're talking about the radiator cooling fan, it thinks the motor's overheat in stress mode.
That's what I thought. Yeah, because as soon as the gauge goes down, I lose the gauge totally.
I know,
like,
but
no,
you, I don't have much time. Listen, you keep talking about that the gauge goes down. That's the cold side. That's the dichotomy. That's the problem. It's hard to fathom why the gauge is going to zero, which is cold, to the left side of the gauge. Then we turn around and we have actions that indicate that the computer's trying to cool the cooling system down. So that's really and truly, if you want to send me an email, I'll find a shop in your geographical area that I would suggest. Or if you have a shop, then take it in and show them what you're talking about. But that's an interesting concept. But we expect the Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Toyota, Honda, when it's in stress mode, the computer's going to take control of the cooling system, turn on the cooling fans, it's going to turn off the air conditioning and not let you have air conditioning and try to get you home. And that's programmed into very lots and lots of cars today. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to come back in about 4.5 minutes. And if you'd like to talk about your car, you can. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is KKNT, and we're here every Saturday from 10 to noon. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us if you want. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'll pull my headphones down just a little bit because I am just having a tough time getting my board to act right today. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair. I've known Kurt for so many years. He's at I-17 in Bell, the northeast corner. There was a time, and I think he still does this, that when you're a new customer, his wife will deliver some present to you, thanking you for their business, for your business. He started that a long time ago, and he for years and years and years, people would say to me, we went to Kurt's, and then his wife stopped by, and she had baked goods and stuff for us. That's a nice thing to do, but he's really worth the drive. He's I-17 in Bell. Certainly if you live within a 5 or 6 or 7 mile radius, 10 mile radius of that area, and you don't already have a good garage that you absolutely love, then I would suggest Kurt's Automotive, northeast corner of Bell and I-17. Steve, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. Thank you. I wanted to tell you first, I love your show. I listen to it every time I'm in the car at this hour, and fantastic. So thank you for all the information that you provide. I have a question. I have a car that's been sitting for a while. It's a 2002 Tahoe. It's probably got about 190,000 miles on it, and over the last few years, I've just been using it to take things to the dump and that kind of thing. So it's got sporadic use, but not a lot. But my son is turning 16, and I want to give it to him. And I'm nervous. I don't know how to get it kind of tuned up and ready to go for more consistent use. I was wondering if you can kind of walk me through what I might need to do to be thinking about.
That's no problem. I can help you with that. I would hop in it, and I would probably drive 15 miles up the freeway and turn around and come back, and I would have arranged to stop by somebody's shop and have them change the oil when it's hot. I would fill it up with gas before I started, and then they change the oil. But our job when we do an oil change and a filter and lube is not just oil change, filter, and lube. We're supposed to inspect the belts and the hoses and the fluids and the tires and the brakes and that kind of stuff, and that's what you really want. So when you have the oil change done, you're going to give them a fresh oil, and they're going to do everything else they're supposed to do. You're going to spend somewhere between $50, give or take, whatever, for an oil change. And the idea is that this is a horse that's been inside of a stall, and you've been, you know, he's just been sitting there for a very long time, and so you're going to take him out, and all of a sudden you're going to run the heck out of him. Is your boy just a 16-year-old driver? He's just getting ready to drive? Okay.
It'd be very typical 16-year-old, I'm sure.
You know, from one dad to the other, from one dad to the other, they make these things that you put on the car, and you have Wi-Fi capabilities to it, and it monitors their acceleration and their braking, and it tells you where they're at and all this kind of stuff, so you can develop trust with them.
Because I like that. That may be the best tip I've gotten in a while.
I'm telling you, when my kids, my son Alan's 43, and my youngest Andy is 4 or 5 years younger, they all laugh because back then I had those kinds of things in the cars that my kids drove. And back then I had the ability, and I still do today, of being able to manipulate the RPM and the speed. But today you can do the same thing. There are things out there on the internet that you can program on your computer and then plug into the connector underneath the dash and change some of the parameters. There's dads out there that put a 50-mile-an-hour limit on their Tahoe for their 16-year-old son. There's software out there that will actually tell you if there's more butts in the seat than what he's telling you is inside the Tahoe.
That technology is impressive.
Yeah, and you can put a camera on the rearview mirror and have it talk to your phone. And if you really want to be dastardly, you can listen to what they're saying, and you can hear it. And I'm not sure that this is a good idea, because this is going to really screw up his date if all of a sudden dad comes over the loudspeaker or the stereo system and says, hey, you know, you're supposed to be home at 10 o'clock when it's, you know, 10 minutes of 10. Nevertheless, there's lots of options for you, but just take it out of the barn. Let's put it in service. Let's change the oil. Let's fill it with fresh fuel. Let's drive it. Fix things as we see it. But there's a good chance that it'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you for all that info.
All right.
I appreciate it. I'm sure my son will, but
you know, I got to tell you, they make little bitty bugs where you can, now I'm not advocating that you need to lit. I mean, you know him better than anybody else. There's dads that want to listen to what the kids talk about inside the car, and that's okay with me. I never felt that was something. I was interested in speed, delta V, how fast they're stopping, how fast they're accelerating, and where the hell they're at. That's what I was concerned with. So,
that's,
you know,
pretty much where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, just, you know, I want you to be safe, and I want you to know that I'm kind of watching you. And your wife, I don't know if your wife's like my wife, but I'm Jack the Ripper, she's Snow White, she hugs him and kisses him, I spank him, you know, that's the way it's been for 40 years. And she would tell them, he doesn't know where he hid the receiver. And they're going out on a Friday night, and I would say to her, I know where the receiver's at. And she says, I know, I just thought I'd give him a break for tonight. But, you know, the kids turned out really good, and I think that they were well aware. But there's trackers that you can plug into the car, and but they can also mess with them. And I suggest to you that the kids of today are probably a little bit more computer savvy than I am. And so, but if he unplugs it, it stops the clock, and you'll know that somebody unplugged it. And perhaps if he tries to reprogram it, you could lock it. But there's lots of stuff you can do. But if the kid's been good, then all of this is talk just for entertainment. That's all it is.
Well, again, I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, good luck to you. From one dad to the other, good luck to you.
Much appreciated. Thank you.
All righty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Back in the days when my kids were driving, which is 25 years ago, we just came out with black box technology. And I remember that the kids had a couple of fender benders and stuff. And at the time, I was working with a group of guys that was trying out this software called Crash Data Recovery. And today, folks, every car you drive, that there's a black box on every car you drive. It's a bad idea to lie. Just shut the hell up. If you're going to talk to your insurance company or your lawyer or anybody else, if you don't lie, just don't talk. That's the answer. Just shut up. But, you know, the lady says, I was just driving along and all of a sudden he pulled out in front of me. Well, that's not exactly what the black box shows. First of all, you're doing 61 in a 35, and yes, he came from your right, but his black box shows that he stopped, but he just wasn't prepared for you to be doing two times the speed limit. And then you didn't even swerve when you broadsided him because you weren't even looking across the windshield. You were looking at your phone, and you were texting at the same time. So those are the kinds of things you need to be wary of. It's just from a lawyer point of view, and I'm not a lawyer, but the lawyers that protect Mark Salem say, just shut the hell up. Just be quiet. Claim your fifth and move on. Okay, who we got?
Let's say hello to Edward.
Edward, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How can I help you?
I got a question about diesel mechanics. I've heard an advertisement on your show before, but I couldn't remember where they're at, up north of Phoenix, in North Phoenix?
Yeah, yes, Strictly Diesel is at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. His name is Nate, and he owns the store, and he's probably one of the finest diesel technicians, and when you meet him, and if you have a daughter that's not married, you're going to probably want to hook him up, although Nate's married, okay? I'm going to tell you that. But he is just the salt of the earth. And when it comes to Chevys and Fords and Dodges and getting them running and the blue smoke and oil in the turbo and codes and the Christmas tree on your dashboard lit up and codes and all that kind of stuff, he's the guy for you. Now, what part of town do you live in?
Central Phoenix.
Okay. Now, you can go to Kurtz at I-17 and Bell, and they can do diesel work as well. But if you want to go to Strictly Diesel, that's the name of his store, Strictly Diesel, then you're going to go see Nate up at Strictly Diesel. He's a good guy.
And what was his telephone number?
I would love to tell you that, but the only thing I have that from Nate is his cell phone, and I can't give you that. But the name of the store is called Strictly Diesel.
And it's on I-17 and what?
Pinnacle Peak? Yeah.
Okay. And what was the other one you mentioned?
Kurt's Automotive. Kurt does diesel work, and he's at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Kurt's Automotive, and it's Curts.
Kurt's Automotive. Okay. Yeah, I just had my 2002 Dodge Ram was leaking a little coolant, and I mean, it might be just the hose needs to be retightened, but, you know, if it's something more than that, I'd like a diesel guy to look at it.
Okay, can I offer you a suggestion?
Sure, go ahead.
This is what everybody's going to do. You're going to pull your truck. We're going to pull your truck into the bay, and we're going to squeeze the upper hose, and if it's rock hard, we're going to walk away from it for 20 or 30 minutes until the pressure dies down. If we squeeze the hose and it's soft enough, we'll loosen up the cap, and then we'll put a pressure tester on it. We're going to screw this device on that's a handheld pump. We're going to look at the radiator cap, and it says that it's a 12-pound radiator cap. So we're going to look at our gauge, and we're going to take it to 13 pounds. Now we're going to walk away from your truck, and we're going to come back 20 minutes later, and there's going to be coolant on the ground, and it's going to be directly above or directly below where the problem is at. and this is something that anybody can do. You can certainly go to Nate, the diesel guy, but this is going to be a hose. It's going to be a radiator. It's going to be a heater core. It's going to be a heater control valve. It's going to be something that circulates in the cooling system. And this is not really a diesel thing. This is a cooling system problem.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, you can go rent.
What's that?
You can go rent the pressure tester at some of these automotive parts store. And you can pump it yourself, but you're going to have to understand when you look underneath it, when it leaks from over here, you're going to have to understand that that's the driver's side part of the water pump. That's kind of where the expertise comes in. But that's as easy as it is, and they're going to charge you somewhere, oh, I'm going to guess here, between $25 and $50 to pressurize your cooling system and tell you exactly where the coolant is leaking. Now, it might be $50 to find it and 10 cents to tighten up the clamp. It could be something as stupid as that, but that's not normally what we're going to see.
Well, a friend of mine, he was a diesel mechanic, was saying there's a weep hole on the water pump itself, and that's where if it's leaking out of the water pump because it's got a bad seal or whatever, it's behind the pulley, and is it slinging it or is it just dripping out? That's what you're saying.
And that's a good question, and it's half and half. I'll take a mirror, a small mirror, and go underneath the snout, and I'll be able to see the weep hole, and sometimes it's going to drip on the back of the pulley, which will sling the coolant, and sometimes it doesn't. But when you're pressure testing it, the motor's not running, so we're not slinging water. So if it's dripping off the back of the pulley that mounts to the front of the water pump, then it's called the pee hole, the weep hole.
Right. Okay.
Okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, thank you for listening to our show. We've still got another half an hour to go, and we've got open lines available if you'd like to join us. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we've got two people calling, but before I do that, I need to tell you about Larry Harker's Auto. I want to tell you about Larry Harker's Auto. Been around since 1967, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And when you walk in the door, you're going to meet Ellen. She's the wife of the owner. And then Bob runs the shop. And in the shop is some really young bucks that are really, really good. They're good. They're complete. They're knowledgeable. They know what they're doing. They know that they're not going to pull the wool over Bob's head. I can tell you that much. And they're really good at what they do with respect to computers and cars. So they understand that this means that, and this means no, and this means yes, and it's important. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, they've been around since 1967. Larry Harker's Auto Repair, good place to go if you don't already have a place that you love, a good place to go. Good morning, Jim. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. Good morning. Love you.
Thank you.
I have a 2000 Honda Civic. I have a 1,300 miles.
Cam, hold on just a minute. I'm losing you, and you're spotty. Can you kind of just rearrange where you're at, and then let's start again?
Okay. This ain't better?
I think so. Go right ahead.
Like I said, I got a 2005 Honda Civic with 101,300 miles, and I recently brought it into a shop, and they gave me a 3-page work recommendation. And I'd like to go over what they want.
Okay, well, let me ask you some questions. At 100,000 miles, you're basically going to do, and actually in 2005, so your vehicle's like 15, 16, 17 years old. But at 100,000 miles, we're going to do all the fluids and all the rubber components, all the belts and all the hoses and all the fluids. Is that kind of the report that they gave you?
Well, that's one of them. But they also have front and rear strut assembly, front control arm assembly.
Okay, stop there for just a minute. Stop there. Let's talk about those two things. If there's no cupping of the tires and the struts aren't leaking oil, then I would disagree politely that you need them. They're saying 100,000 miles. They're saying 100,000 miles, and I don't agree that that's a valid thing. So if they're leaking oil or if your tires are wearing abnormally, then yes. The other thing they said was the struts, and what was the second? Lower control arms.
The front control arm assembly.
Okay. When you take off abruptly or you stop abruptly, is there any clunking going on in the front end?
No, not that I noticed.
Okay. I want you to try that a little bit more aggressive. So when you get in your car and your wife doesn't have a hot cup of coffee in her lap, because that's a stupid idea to be jamming on the brakes when she's got that. But you're driving. I want you to come up to a traffic light and then just kind of abruptly bring it to a stop. And I want to know if there's any clunking going on, because the lower control arms, when the bushings are bad, typically they're clunking when you abruptly stop and when you abruptly take off. There's also tire wear. If the tire wear is perfect and they want to replace the struts and the lower control arms, I suspect that this repair is going to benefit them more than it's going to benefit you.
Okay. Well, then they go on to constant velocity axle assembly.
Okay. And if the boots, the constant velocity CV axles, they call them CV, there's an elbow joint on each end of the axle, and then there's a joint that we need to lubricate, so we have this rubber boot that goes over there and it holds the grease. When the rubber boot wears out, it tears and it throws grease all over everywhere. So if the axles are leaking, then they're throwing grease, then yes, you need two axles. If they're not, then the question is why? Why did you write that down?
And then alignment, four-wheel alignment, and then they wanted me to buy four new tires and balance and install them.
Okay. Don't say the name of this shop. Is this a shop that you go to on a regular basis?
No. I'm new here in Arizona, and I would always bring in at the Honda, but I got tired of Honda.
Okay.
So, I
think you stepped out of the kettle and into the fire is what I think, but that's not. I'm just throwing that out for you. I think you need another opinion. You don't have any clunking. You don't have any grease on the ground. You don't have a lot of stuff that would tie you this repair to something. How much is this whole estimate?
Well, they go on to mention, like I say, tires and battery, radiator assembly, timing belt, coolant system flush, thermostat, brake fluid flush, spark plugs.
Okay. Okay. Well,
the whole thing is like $7,000.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
I live in, Midtown, like Camelback and 32nd.
Okay. How about Martin's Auto? I'd like you to take it over to Martin's Auto, and he's at 16th Street and Indian School.
Yeah, well...
I trust him, and I think it's certainly appropriate for you to walk in and say, here's a list of things I've told on my car. How much will you charge me to look my car over and agree or disagree with these? That's the answer. I can't tell you whether you need all that kind of stuff, but I'll tell you this much. If my shop did that, I would be kicking some butt. Everything at 100,000 miles, they, who knows if you need axle boots? Who knows? They have all this stuff on there that, yes, it's stuff that we typically deal with, but they're just kind of, I ask you questions.
This is like a dream sheet.
What?
I say this is like a dream sheet for them, you know?
Well, $7,000, I mean... Is it? Don't you say the name of the shop. Is it a chain store or an independent?
No, independent.
Okay. Is it a dealer or an independent?
Independent.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I don't know. I would be embarrassed beyond belief if somebody had that piece of paper and it came from my shop, and I would be really mad and I would be very, very upset. But this is the worst of our industry. If they had any nerve at all, they would have drug your butt inside that shop and showed you all of that. look at these bushings right here. You can see where they're flaking apart. Look at the shiny piece of this metal touching that piece of metal. Look at your axle boots. They're torn. Look at how it's thrown grease in a big circle. Look at your coolant. It's all rusty, ugly, dirty. Look at your, oh, look at these engine mounts. They're collapsed with oil, and they're all bulged out. And this one, watch what happens to this motor mount when I rev the motor up. See it lift up and fall down? Well, it's broken. That's the dog and pony show that has to go along with all of this stuff. Do you know where my heart rate is at right now? You go over to Martin's and talk to Dave. And Dave is the one in the wheelchair, and he runs a really clean shop. And I would give him that list and say, would you look it over, and would you show me what's valid and what's not? And he's going to drag your butt underneath the car with him, and we'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm coming a little hot all of a sudden, and I will trim it down for Gil. Gil's my partner. He's the one that kind of flies with me and for me and keeps me on track and all that kind of stuff. So we just got off the phone with Jim, and we're going to go to Richard, but I have something to say. Jim said he had an 05 Civic. He has 101,000 miles on it, and he just got a $7,000 inspection sheet and an estimate to do some work on his car. Folks, there's no reason without a dog and pony show that you should ever bite on something like that. A good shop will say, Jim, come in here. Look at the axle boots. See, this one's torn and slinging grease, and this one isn't. Well, there's two on the left, and there's two on the right, two boots. We need to do both axles because each one of them has a bad joint. And look here. Can you hear that clicking noise right there? Okay, that's it. The lower control arms, look at the tire wear. It's abnormal. Here's what's wrong. These arms are moving forward and backward. Look, I'm going to let you hear it. So I'm going to get a big bar, and I'm going to push on the control arm, clunk, and let go. Clunk and let go. As far as the tires are concerned, they're good, but they're aged out and they're 10 years old, so you need new tires because of this number right here. And I'll give you a bid for four tires, and you can go somewhere else. As far as your coolant is concerned, it's just filthy nasty. Let me show you some clean stuff mixed with water, because we mix coolant with water. And here's the green stuff, and here's your stuff, which is rusty, dirty water in the cooling system. Now, you'll notice I took the radiator cap right off, and I'm taking it right out of your radiator. Your power steering fluid should look like this. It should either be amber or cherry, and yours is brown. I'd like to flush the power steering system. You've gone 100,000 miles. Here's what's going on, folks. It's real simple. We used to be able to bite on your wallet every 3,000 miles. That's the way it's been since 1968 when I first started working in my first gas station. Every 3,000 miles, you came in, and we got to sell you something. Today, we've got semi-synthetic oil. A normal conventional oil change with conventional oil, the old-fashioned oil, is 3,000 to 5,000 mile interval. So it's gone from 3,000 to 5,000. Then we have a semi-synthetic oil, and that's between 5,000 oil change to 7,500 or 8,000. Then we have a synthetic oil change that goes from 8 to 12 and even 15,000 miles. Well, if I give you an oil that's going to last 12,000 miles, I'm not going to see you in 12,000 miles. So I gotta sell you stuff when you come in. When you come in, I've got to, because I'm not going to see every 3,000 miles. I can kind of spread that out over 3,000. The first time you come in, I'm going to bite you for like 600, and then the next time 300, and then the next time this, because I'm going to find things wrong. But if you don't come in but once a year, I got to give you that $7,000 bill. That's what's going on. We just lost you because of oil change intervals have been tripled. And as a result of that, then some people are instructing their staff that we got to sell. We've lost a lot of business because of these new cars and new oils. So that's what's really going on. Richard, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I've got this is my grandson's car.
Okay.
I'm helping them with the expenses. And it's a Nissan Sentra. It's a 1.8 liter, and it's a 2014. And it's got about 26,000 miles on it. And they need the radiator replaced. And I was just kind of curious of the
2 minutes.
The condenser, do they have to take the condenser out, complete it out? Just, just move some bolts around. And another thing, I would just want to know, are radiators just like thermostats? There's a couple of companies make them.
Okay, well, let me answer the first one. The condenser is part of the air conditioning system, and it's filled
right.
with Freon. And
right.
you should be able to unbolt the condenser and move it aside to get to the radiator. But the
right.
radiator is probably going to come out of one side of what we call the core support, and the condenser comes out the other side.
Okay.
So you're going to have to gain access to get the radiator out, and that means you're going to have to move some plastic. You're going to have to take the top of the cover off the radiator. You're going to have to do some work. But the answer is you don't need to disconnect the hoses to the condenser.
1 minute.
So that you don't have to have your air conditioning recharged.
Okay, that's what I was going to... And then this engine's got two thermostats in it, an upper and a lower. And the guys that were doing it, they were kind of surprised because of the size of the engine. And two, you know, it's just, you know, so. I was checking radiators, the cost of the radiators, because I'm gonna help my grandson buy the radiator. I'm
okay.
just kind of shooting out, you know. I was just kind of wondering, is this where company make the radiators, or is that?
I'm gonna send you to on the internet Rock Auto.
Rock Auto.
Rock Auto. You're gonna order it for Rock Auto. Let me tell you a secret, okay? But don't tell anybody, okay?
Okay.
Rock Auto is a trailer in Utah with two guys,
mm-hmm.
and what they've done is they've created this monster that eats automotive parts up. Thousands of dollars of parts an hour. So they will, what they'll do is they're going to call, and they already have relationships with a variety of big warehouses here in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you call Rock Auto, they're going to ship it from a warehouse that I already know about, that I think the world of. There's two of them. And I think you're going to get a good part, and you're going to get a good price, because that's how it works. See, what they've done is they've eliminated all the other people between who has the radiator and who needs the radiator.
Right, right. Well, one of your shops is doing the work.
Okay. Okay.
One of your shops is doing the work, and I was just kind of like wondering.
Have you asked him if you can do that yet?
No, I haven't. It's about 5 miles.
Okay.
5 miles from me, and they're in Tempe.
Okay. I think I would just simply ask them. I would say this. I would say, I know that you don't typically like people to bring their own parts, but I'm the grandmother and I'm helping my grandson.
Right.
And I would like your permission to just take advantage of you one time. And can I order the radiator on the internet? And can I bring it to you? And I understand that you're not going to warranty the radiator because you didn't make any money and it's not yours, but I'd like to save some money. Now, he could say, What? How much money are we talking about? And you say $39, and he says, I'll just knock $39 off your radiator, and then I'll give you a warranty, and I'll take care of it.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. See, I'm visually impaired, and I can't do all that stuff. But I was just kind of wondering.
Yeah.
They answered me about $600 for the whole thing.
All right. Have you been into this shop before, or is this your first visit?
Daughter has.
Okay. And that means something. The first time you come in and all hell's broke loose and you're
yeah.
asking for help and, well, I want to bring my own parts and stuff, that's kind of an uncomfortable situation for us shop owners. But your daughter's been there before. She probably has a file. Everybody knows it. They know her. And that might be something that, and because people do that all the time. We process 30, 40, 50 cars a day. There's going to be those that happen. And you got to go with the flow. So you only have two choices. You say yes to keep the customer, you say no, and they're going to go somewhere else. That's the only two choices the shop owner has. So I got to run, but good luck to you. I got to go, and we'll be back right after this.
If you remember the crash of 2008, could you afford another loss in your portfolio like that? I bet the answer is no. The good news is there's a strategy designed.
We have 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to wrap the show up in about 15 minutes. But if you want to call in and have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to give us a call. We've talked about a couple of things this show that are kind of important. Number one is our industries, the repair industry is not doing real good because the volume of traffic is lower, and that's because they've opened the window up of when you need stuff. Instead of 3,000 miles, now sometimes you don't need cooling system flushes till 100,000 miles. You don't need front brakes until 60,000 miles instead of 30,000 miles. And those are wear related. So the more you use them, then the faster they wear out, so forth and so on. Then we also talked about, do I bring my own parts to the store and stuff like that? I'll tell you what I think. Not too long ago, a young man came in and said, you know, can I bring my own radiator? And we said, well, we're that always creates a warranty problem. Have you been in before? And he said, no, I haven't. He said, but my dad has. Well, our customer numbers are up to 38,000 customers. His dad was like 870. And I looked it up, and his dad had been in like the 2 weeks, 2 weeks before today. So I got grandson here that wants to do business with the shop that grandpa's been doing business with, and I'm going to bend over backwards for the grandkid. That's all there is to it. That's all we're, I mean, multi-generations of the same family doing business with us is something we want. We want the trust. And the older people, and they're going to pass on to the younger generation that we do a good job. All of us are like that. But there's a lot of us that aren't. And I think that two-thirds of the auto repair shops in the Phoenix area are guys that have your best interest at heart. But there's a third there that's going to just rip your heart out every time you come in with all kinds of things that you need to have done. And if you just will ask them, let's get my owner's manual out and show me where I need to flush my Scookulator valve for $395. Those are questions you have to ask. Those are questions you have to deal with. And oftentimes when you challenge them to show you, they're going to come up, well, that your owner's manual doesn't apply to Arizona. Or no, we don't use the owner's manual to decide when we're going to change your cooling system. Well, I'll tell you what you do, sir, ma'am, whatever. My husband is just one of those guys that, you know, he just likes everything in writing. So I would appreciate it. I'm going to say no right now, but I would like you to put your complete estimate and all the stuff that we need in some kind of a format. Would you list it and then put a price along with it and then tell us why? So it's really like three things. You need a cooling system service, flush. Why? Because it's brown and it's ugly. And how much is that going to cost? $139. Okay, perfect. So you see, because bad guys in our industries are not likely to write stuff down that's not true. And as a result of that, that's why I say to you, let's back up and let's go ahead and put it in writing. Because that kind of protects you. And if they don't put it in writing, or if they just want to tell you but not put it in writing, that should cause the hair on the back of your neck to stand up. I would say that there's probably one out of 20 shops out there, and I know a lot of them. I know of a lot of them, but there's just a whole lot of them out there that, for whatever reason, want to sell you stuff that's really not in your best interest. You're not due for it. It's not, and they represent it as industry standards, or it's something that you can't live without. But what they want to do is not even in your owner's manual under the maintenance schedule. So if we want to do and flush your Scookulator valve, then it should be in your owner's manual. And I'm making that word up, to be honest with you. Scookulator's valve is just a funny word. But the idea is that to protect, but the self-defense mechanism is write it down, staple your business card to the repair order, and I'll get back with you. And then that's where we separate the boys from the girls and the men from the women, because if they're not willing to write it down and tell you exactly in writing what they just told you and give you prices related, then there's something wrong. One last thing, and then we're going to take a caller, because I know I got a caller. If you have a 2000 to 2002 or 3 Excursion, Ford Excursion, it's kind of like a big Suburban. If you have one of those with a 7.3 diesel and you want to sell it, then let me know. I'm in the market for a 2000, and this vehicle is 22 years old. But if you have one and you've thought about selling it, then mark at marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003 Excursion, Ford Excursion with the diesel motor, and I'll tell you something else, if you have one with captain's chairs in the second row of seats, whew, that's even better. So anyway, if you're interested, mark@marksalem.com, and who's the caller?
Say hello to Scott.
Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good.
Hey, I got a really quick question. I'm not going to take too much of your time. I've got a older Chevy, 77 Chevy pickup that has a metal radiator, and I'd like to know, are there still shops out there that can oil them out and rot them out?
Yes, there's a performance shop on the freeway just west of the airport that we use for those. But I want to tell you, the reason why you're asking me this question is because radiators are really cheap, and very, very few of us are doing anything to radiators. We're replacing them all the time.
Okay.
And it's just cheaper, better, faster. Now, if you bring in a 32 Ford Hot Rod with this special radiator, I'm going to send it to the performance radiator shop. But on your 77 Chevy pickup truck, that's a cross flow. You can and you can get, like I said, go to Rock Auto, go on the internet, find a couple of part numbers and bid them. And if you're gonna Rock Auto is going to do a geographical sweep of the entire area where you live. And I'm doing free commercials for them, but they're really good people, and I'm not getting anything out of it. It's just a really nifty idea, but it's going to come from Parts Authority. It's going to come from Factory Motor Parts. It's going to come from Napa, O'Reilly's. That's who they deal with. And I like the idea that they're the ones that are filtering all the different vendors for you, the customer. And that's the reason why I like them.
Yeah. And you know what? I've been on Rock Auto many times, and I've researched this. And I can also go to an aluminum radiator versus the factory.
Yes.
And, you know, they're not really that expensive. They're not really that bad in price. So,
The aluminum one is a little bit more susceptible to corrosion, so you'll probably want to flush your cooling system at least every 24 months, every couple years. And I think you have green coolant in that. And the aluminum one is going to dissipate heat better than the metal one.
A little bit better.
So, to be honest with you, what's the price difference between the aluminum replacement and the OEM replacement, the one that came with it?
I want to say maybe $40-$60 somewhere around there.
Yeah, and the aluminum one's a more expensive one just because they're not real common, but it is the better of the two as far as I'm concerned. So if you're going to keep this or pass it on to your grandson or your son or whatever, then I'd probably, if you're going to keep it, then I'd put an aluminum one in it.
And it's got a big block 454 in it, so I want to keep that, you know, it runs hot anyway by nature. So
okay, but hot, okay, on your 454 is between center and three-quarter. I don't care where the needle's at on either end of the center mark. It's okay.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. So if I'm hauling stuff up north and I got a trailer and stuff like that,
you hit three quarters?
Half to three quarters.
Okay, anywhere around three quarters is fine. Let me give you a real quick lesson. Every time you shut your car off, you create a tablespoon of water. Water boils at what?
212.
Okay. That's the reason why we have a 195 thermostat in your truck, and that's the reason why we wanted to run 220, is because we want to get the water out of the oil. And so it's that simple. It's just old-fashioned science. So when you're pulling, and you know, anywhere in the second half of it, as long as the needle's not in the red, you're okay. And especially if you know why it's getting hot, getting hotter, but not red hot, because you got a trailer full of, you know, your wife's beer in the back of the truck. Then you already know. So, but don't be afraid of the heat. But the aluminum will perform as well as the metal one. It's just make sure that they're going to say how many tubes, and you probably got two or three tubes, cross flow tubes. And as long as you kind of match that up, you'll be fine. Okay.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it very much.
You bet. So my email is mark@marksalem.com if you have a car question or a car problem or something like that. I'm not real good at getting involved in disputes between you and your auto repair shop unless it happens to be somebody I know, and then I will make a call and say something, you know, like, hey, can you work with this customer a little bit more or something like that. But I don't really like to get involved in those because that's not the purpose of the radio show. The radio show is to help introduce what our industry has to offer you and what we say that's good and what we say that's bad. What we do is good, and what we do is bad. and to say things that you've heard before that you go, ooh, the way he said it makes it sound bad. And I meant to. I really object to those. I circled this. He's got a $7,000 estimate on an 05 Civic with 100,000 miles. $7,000. What were they thinking? Whose interest did they have in front? Did they have their interest or his interest? He sounded like an older gentleman, probably my age, and there's just no reason to do that. Look at what he's got and say, the most pressing issue is the steel hanging out of the right front tire. We need to put a couple front tires and get this thing aligned. And we might have to put a tie rod end on this side here, but let's do that because that's the most pressing. And until then, I don't want you to hop in your car and go to Flagstaff. That kind of talk. You know, take care of your customer. Point out what we really need to address now, and then I'll give you a list of some other stuff that we can do down the road. But to walk into a shop and have them write a $7,000 sheet, what was the shop thinking? And then what are you thinking when you say, okay, I think it's worth to get a second opinion. And I think it's a good idea that you can go to my website, marksalem.com, and I have a list of great shops there. And I promise you they're good shops, and I promise you this. If you have a dispute with them and somebody tells the shop to give you back $200 and the shop doesn't, two things happen. Number one, I kick them off my list, and I've only done that once in 20 years. And number two, I pay the $200 or the $2,000 or whatever. The fact of the matter is I back up the shops I send you to with my personal guarantee that they're the best I can find. So mark@marksalem.com. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt. Drive safely. And if somebody does something nice, honk at them and wave, and it'll make their day.